Dear Shooter, we've either done it or thought about it, but have you created your bunker for survival or a family grave? The landscape of threats are changing, and we have to change our defensive plan to match. You may not have the time to keep up, but we're here to break it down.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Wow, you need to make that
clip on. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Well, happy Thursday. And this all got started because you made a comment to me. Is it a bunker or a tomb?
It's a fine line. If you don't plan it right, it's the latter.
Right? And I've thought a lot about this recently because if you think about the threats that we have today versus, you know, when everybody was building bunkers back in like the 50s and 60s because the red threat, we're going to get nuked. Like, that's the purpose of a bunker. Now, we see a lot of safe rooms. We see a lot of, you know, defensible positions in a house. But the more I think about this, because I was always the, you know, I'm going to build my compound and I'm going to have a bunker. And I even had these really cool designs for bunkers, but I want to be mobile. I want to be above ground.
I want to have the option. Right? So building a bunker, security is, you know, paramount. You want to keep everything out, right? But you've got to have a way out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Benghazi taught us that even one of the most secure, most fortified compounds designed by high-level security guys, blast doors, the whole thing.
Yeah, and backed by Big Daddy government.
That's right. They weren't planning on Molotov cocktails.
Right.
Fire was the one thing that had that thing into a tomb.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get out of it, but you're running right into the guys that are trying to kill you.
And I'm glad you brought up fire. Especially specifically the Molotov cocktail, because yes. What we're seeing now is the firebombing of Teslas, of charging stations, of dealerships, because everybody's pissed off at Elon Musk because he has gone in and cut off the gravy train.
Yeah, he's found all the waste and fraud and people stealing from you, and people are angry at him for it.
Yeah. But this is what we're dealing with. And I have always said, like, there's nothing more dangerous than a Democrat out of power.
Agreed.
And what we're seeing, especially with these, you know, the firebombings of the Tesla dealerships and the, you know, the attacks on Tesla owners and the charging stations, this is, and we've talked about this before, like, this is a level of state-sanctioned violence because this is the Democrat Party throwing a temper tantrum.
We've seen this before. It had an Antifa name before.
Yeah.
But it's not any different in any way, shape, or form. And Seattle and Portland will never be the same because of it.
Oh, Seattle, yeah, they're gone. Like, as cities that anybody would ever want to visit, they're gone.
They killed all that. They had safe areas that were supposed to have been more of a secure district in Portland. And the rioters took over the damn police station.
Well, yeah. Do they still have the park?
Yes.
I thought they still had the encampment in the park.
So if you're planning your own in your private residence, couple things you want to be mindful of is don't be showy and flashy that you have things. Don't make yourself a target.
All of the Amazon boxes, my dear?
That doesn't mean shit. I ordered bathroom towels with Easter bunnies on them.
I know.
But you have stuff, right? The idea is they're driving by, and if they think that you have things they want, they're going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want them to stop, right? I'm not saying make the front of your house look like a hobo lives there, but I'm send the message that stopping here is probably a bad idea.
Well, and you know, I don't know that it matters what the front of your house looks like, because you don't want to look like you have everything in the world, right? I get that part, but at the same time, let's look at the flip side of that. If you look like you a hobo lives there, they're looking at easy target for a place to stay.
Only if they want to stay there and there's something they can gain from doing it. Otherwise, they're going to move on.
Right.
We've all watched Homestead.
Yes.
Okay. So what strikes me about Homestead is very interesting. This rich guy has a very nice compound on the top of a hill. It is high profile, high visibility, definitely high dollar, high rent stake. He has. And there's a line of people standing at his front gate because they want in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good guys, the folks that are not there to wish you any kind of ill will stand at the front gate and ask nicely to come in. The bad guys see this and go, I'm going to find out if there's a back door. And they do. They find the back door and they get in anyway.
Right.
But he's made himself a target by showing the big house, showing the greenhouse, putting up a fence. If you put up a fence, there's something behind it worth protecting.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't protect it, it's not yours.
You know, one of the things that struck me when I was watching that show was the government, the little city official guy.
Oh yeah,
that wanted to take possession of everything for what he called equitable distribution.
That's right. He's a socialist.
He absolutely was, and it really struck me because I'm not going to name names here, but we have a politician like that here that they understand very clearly that he who has the resources has the power.
Correct.
And that's what this, and I was very struck by their portrayal of that, of the government coming in, and because I have a government title, I am now entitled to take what you have worked for, what you have earned, what you have purchased.
Well, it's more nefarious than that. You're going to tell me what you have by an inventory list and tell me where it's at. So when I do come, I have an organized method and plan to take it all from you.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can see yourself out. It's pretty simple.
Well, and I actually thought about that. Like after I watched it, I kind of sat down and I really contemplated, like, okay, how would I handle this?
What stage in the evolution of things are you in?
Well, it was a, you know, I looked at it kind of at face value the way they had presented the situation, right? The guy comes in, he goes, oh, I'm going to need an inventory of all of this. And I just, my gut reaction was, okay, I'm going to ask you very politely to leave. And I kind of thought out the process of the conversation in my mind, because I can see this little weasel politician going, no, I am XYZ politician and you will bow to me. And I know my next response was, you know, look, if you don't leave now, I'm going to get a lot less polite.
You're taking a step in there that I wouldn't have taken. I ask once. Because at that point, no harm, no foul. You can walk on your own. You refuse that, I will bury you in the backyard. And I will help people look for you.
Well, and I was kind of going step by step through the conversation, because I know this politician would be like, and if I don't, what are you going to do? And it's my response would have been, yeah, I'm going to ask a lot less politely.
No, I wouldn't even told him that. I'd have just shot him in the head, buried him in the backyard, and help people look for him. Now, I don't know what you're talking about. He was never here.
Hey, I got gardens. Wood chipper.
Right?
I need to...
So,
I need...
sorry. You are going to threaten me and everybody else that's here and our survival and livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
That's not okay.
And the thing about it is, like, in the scenario that we're talking about, like, society was in the middle of breakdown. Like, government had no function at this point.
It had broken down. At that point, you were looking at neighborhood warlords.
Right.
And he came to one of the warlords and tried to flex.
Yeah.
With nothing to offer support.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've talked about this before, and I don't know if we've necessarily talked about it in the podcast, but we've always said, you know, because that's always a danger, right? Our neighbors are not stupid. They know who we are. They know kind of they have a pretty damn good idea of what we have. But we've also had the discussions with them in advance. We know what they bring to the table. You show up at my front gate with nothing to offer. Sorry.
In Wyoming, we have a phrase that it kind of transcends some of those boundaries and discussions. And it's, you're welcome, my campfire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they bring something to the table to offer, whether it's livestock or crops or ingenuity, know-how. They bring something of value to the discussion because it's my campfire.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to need all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't bring something of value, you're not welcome at my campfire. I may very well like you, but you have to have value to the rest of the world and how I live. Otherwise, you can go find someplace else to exist.
Now, one of the things that I found kind of interesting watching the show, like there were people that they felt didn't have value but ended up having value. The guy that installed fireplaces is a great example
great
of that.
Point. Yep.
So just because at face value they may not appear to have value, it might still be worth having the discussion.
And in all fairness to that discussion, that dude lived outside the fence.
He did.
For weeks.
Yep.
And hung out knowing that this was his best shot.
But here's the flip side of that. He never presented himself as a threat.
Not once.
And that's where it gets tricky. Actually, I had some of a discussion with one of my students over the weekend. We were talking about this, and I was trying to explain, like, it, especially in the larger cities, because this student happened to be from New York. And I said, you know, very plainly, you know, with the right crew, 12, 15, 20 guys, you could cripple New York.
I don't know if it'd take that many, but yes, you could.
It may not. But they would be eating each other in a week. And she was kind of taken back by this statement. And I explained, you know, look, think about this. Grocery stores have 36 hours and they need to be resupplied. Most people, especially in big cities, because they live in small spaces, they don't have weeks worth of food stored up in their homes. They have 2 or 3 days max.
Well, and take inventory of your local grocery store. You have your perishables. It's going to be your produce aisle, your meat aisle, right? Your refrigeration aisle. And without power, refrigeration goes away.
Yep. So, and that stuff's gone in 12 hours.
12 hours. So it's first out, it's gone, it's done. Everything else is pretty minimal in inventory, in grand scheme of things. You got a couple aisles of canned goods and dry goods, and that's it.
Yeah, and even like your super Walmarts and stuff, they don't have a big storeroom in the back. That stuff is coming in as it's leaving.
That's right. It's an on-demand type of supply chain right now. And so the grocery stores are going to be minimal in 5 days, next to nothing.
I don't even give it that because it, as soon as people understand and start to wrap their head around a problem, the grocery stores are going to get looted, like, immediately.
I agree with you completely. But the value of what they have inside diminishes overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that level of supply.
Right.
So you're right. Inside a week, people become very desperate. And that's when the time when people become primal and dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the furthering of that same discussion, is, you know, because she was explaining to me a neighbor, a very liberal neighbor that is just absolutely appalled that she is seeking out any kind of firearms training. And she had said to her, and this really struck me. She said, you know, if all I'm doing is I'm with my spousal unit and all I'm doing is I'm fighting for survival, is that really a world I want to live in? And I thought, okay, logically I can kind of see where she's coming from. But at the same time, survival instinct is a thing and it kicks in. And when you become desperate, you're exactly right. You become primal. We turn back into monkeys really fast.
Grandpa had a saying, you will play the cards that you've been dealt.
Mm-hmm.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, good cards, bad cards, you will play those cards.
Yeah, don't play me in poker, because if I start feeding the pot, I've got the cards.
And if I have to cheat at cards, we are in a really bad spot.
Yeah.
Right? So the world that you want to live in is not a choice you get to make.
Right.
Do you want to live?
Mm-hmm.
That is a choice you get to make. Right?
And that becomes a very scary scenario.
It does.
You know, one of the things I love about the life that I have is we have options because we've created them for ourselves. Now, I get it. Like, not everybody has the acreage to be able to do what we do. Not everybody has. What are you up to now? Maybe 3 greenhouses?
Yes.
Well, you know, I mean, it's middle of April here.
She's harvesting tomatoes.
Yeah, tomatoes, jalapeno peppers. We got green peppers ready, yeah. just about ready to harvest. I mean, it's great. Like, I have fresh produce that I walk into the laundry room and dig into the greenhouse, and I have.
Well, and if you count my lettuce stand, there's 4 gardens.
Oh, that's God. Right. Yeah.
You have food as a continual supply.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, we do it because we do have that prepper mentality. And it's weird to call it a prepper mentality because in where we live, it's a lifestyle. I mean, for us to go to the grocery store, it's a 30-minute drive.
That's right.
It's not like it's convenient. We're not just running down to the corner store.
But that's that self-sustaining, self-reliance side of things that Wyoming folks have, that a lot of folks in the country don't.
Right. And that's just it. But like for us, it's a lifestyle. I mean, we talk about the Mormons, but just Wyoming, where we live, because we have like no population. Our supply chain, if you look at the winter, we get a bad winter storm and roads and interstates get closed for days at a time. You're not getting that resupply. The grocery store model is still the same.
That's correct.
So, you know, most households here, we're stocked up for 2 weeks.
Well, I've been in homes, friends of mine who live back east, and the pantry is not a thing.
Hmm.
That storeroom of more than 24, 48 hours worth of food is not a thing. They don't do that. They shop on their way home from work every day, and because they don't have the space to be able to have the pantry.
Right.
Now, our pantry at our house is 100 square feet. It's
mm-hmm.
big.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy's pantry is well-stocked, and it's multiple pantries. You don't just have one.
Well, because they didn't build me one big enough for right. my liking.
Exactly right. But at any given time, I can say, hey, do you have, like, egg noodles? And you've got a selection thereof.
Of course I do. Right? One, I hate shopping. And two, like you said, it's way over there.
It's way over there. But if the world goes to hell tomorrow, you still have.
It wouldn't matter.
That's the point. And when we look at making a safe space, it's not about the fortress as much as it is, are you going to make it tomorrow?
Right.
Are you going to make it a week from now? How about a month from now? That's when the world starts to get dodgy. How about 6 months from now?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of coyote have you had to become to survive at that 6-month mark?
If you even make it that long.
Right.
I mean, I would gamble that especially in the United States. And I, you know, we have become a very convenience oriented society. And we don't know how to survive on our wits.
We have entire generations that actually think the meat comes from the supermarket.
Well, yeah, and they have to Google how to boil an egg.
This is terrifying because you won't have electricity. Google won't be a thing.
No.
It won't be available. And if you don't have the knowledge base, what do? You sit in the fetal position and suck your thumb?
I think that's going to be a lot of society.
So
I hate to say it.
Take a look around and look at your survival metrics and prepare a little bit for start with a week. Build out to a month. That's going to take some planning and some effort. Then build out to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take some planning and an effort. And it's a lot more than people think it is because you have to factor in perishable food. You have to factor in security because if you can't keep it, it's not yours.
Right.
Back to that safe room security side of things. And if you can't defend your property, you're going to have to leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
Which means all of that you saved, you just gave up.
Yeah, because you can only take what you can carry on
your
back.
That's right. Now you got a go bag.
Yeah, and not only do you have to carry it, but you've got to be able to move because speed is safety.
Stagnant is death.
Right.
So that part of your planning of egress and in and out, and do I have a cache somewhere else? Can I go to a friend's house? Do I have enough friends nearby? Diplomacy becomes a survival skill.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're going to show up somebody's house, and if you don't have anything to value other than your wits, you better be on your A game.
You
better be a charming motherfucker if I'm going to let you in.
Let's pay some bills, and I will throw out our philosophy.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations. Using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
Okay, so you were talking about, you know, start with a week. Now, the philosophy that I've developed is, in I call this program the 10X plus 3. And the 3 is the critical component. So start with 3 days. From there, you have a baseline to work that up to 3 weeks.
That's valid.
Which is what I consider short term. Beyond that, you go to 3 months. After that, you go to 3 quarters, being 9 months. And then from there, you've got the baseline to work up to 3 years. Now, it takes time. And you really have to have a plan to make this work. But once you get the 3 days to the 3 weeks, then it's just kind of building on what you already have for the baseline. And it's, think about, in the way I present this to my clients is, all right, so let's assume there's no power. What does that do? If there's no power, there's probably no water. So how do you rectify that? Do you have you know, aside from your family, do you have pets? Do you have livestock? You have to think about those things as well. What does it take on a daily basis to maintain that?
And that's baseline. That is not doing anything recreational. That is baseline. That's survival.
Mm-hmm.
Outside that, there's a human element. Probably the most important thing you're going to have to prepare for is interaction with other people.
Right.
There will be refugees. There will be exploratory. And there will be, I want to roll over and take your shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And trade and commerce is going to hold some of that at bay. Right? But you got to be careful about what you trade.
Right.
Never, ever, ever put your medical stuff on trade. Because you're exposing yourself and somebody's going to come and take that from you at force.
Mm-hmm.
Don't expose your everyday food for trade. None of your meats, none of your produce. That's not for trade. That's for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Stock up on things like cocoa. Right? That is something you're not going to get when the world comes to an end. But it's a luxury item. And you can make brownies or whatever with it, right? So those are trade items. And it's a very rare thing. And you got like one can to trade, right? But never trade your medical.
Well, and consider people's vices.
Yep, absolutely right.
Huge trade item.
To an extent, though, while you trade in booze, for an example, because it's a universal currency, never trade in bullets.
Mm-mm.
That exposes yourself to, I want to come take your shit then.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Never trade in firearms because you're enabling them to then come and take your shit later.
Right.
So you got to be careful about what you trade in.
So let me ask you this. What would be your number one, like, what are you going to prepare for? Like, what's your number one thing to have? Is it security? Is it?
So picking them, they come in groupings, right? You've got to have personal security enough to be able to survive. Forget the world for a second. I wake up tomorrow, I've got to be able to make it, right? Those are the items I've got to have. It's got to be water. It's got to be food. It's got to be shelter, right? Outside that, it becomes less of a need for every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes things I'm going to have to work for.
Right.
Right? So then outside that is going to be the luxury items, the things that are going to produce the other items for me down the line. I'm going to be really working for seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be securing my water source, right? Those things are going to carry me a long way. I'm going to be fortifying my security so nobody can take what I have.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I just kind of asked that question because I've really put a lot of research and effort into this, and I always tell people number one is going to be your shelter. Human beings are not designed to just withstand the elements.
We live in Wyoming. That's a bad plan.
Right. But anywhere.
I don't know. If you lived in Florida, you could live a long time out in the elements.
Probably. But, yeah, up here.
Until a hurricane gets your ass.
Well, yeah, it's not that the wind is blowing. It's what the wind is blowing.
Correct. It's debris that kills you.
But, I always tell people, like, shelter's number one. And water's going to be number two. Because we can survive about 3 days without water. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Food is, like, way below security. Like, because security comes after water.
Agreed.
Most of us have been operating out of the basement for too long. We've got a little bit of survival that we can withstand.
Yeah, but 21 days, that all goes away.
21 days. But 21 days gives you an awful lot of time to procure something.
Agreed.
So shelter, water, security, like those are the three number ones. Shelter being first, because like I said, humans are not designed to just go out and withstand the elements.
Agreed.
But you know, to your point, you know, security's high on the list because if you can't keep it, it's not yours. We've said that I don't know how many times. And of course, you know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, end of the world type stuff. But what about the everyday? it took me a long time to wrap my head around the fact, because we've been living in a world for the last 4 years as gun owners, as Second Amendment advocates, as we want to be free Americans, that our own government was conspiring against us. It took me a while to wrap my head around the fact that, you know, the other side now thinks that.
Sure.
But the difference is the other side's not afraid to throw the brick.
Yeah. In times of comfort, though, throwing the brick, we're going to mock them a little bit. We may beat their ass. But it really is not going to affect us in a future moving forward. When the world comes to an end, throwing the brick gets one between the eyes. Because I'm not going to let you pick up another brick.
Right, but I'm just talking about the world as it is today.
Right.
Right?
We are in a realm of comfort.
I don't know that we are.
No, you are. You've got a house you live in. You got plenty of water source. You got gas in all your vehicles.
We
you
are.
Got food in your pantry. You are in a place of comfort.
We are.
Right.
But think about the people that live in Denver.
Agreed. They still have that to a certain micro extent.
But they're dealing with riots.
Yep.
And they are dealing with, like I said, they are willing to throw the brick.
Yep.
And the thing about it is, and this is something that I'm going to totally credit to Michael Bain, and he's absolutely right. The first brick's the hardest. By the time you get to the 435 guy that's throwing the brick, it ain't that hard.
No. And what you're talking about is your willingness to actually stand up and say enough's enough. They have a volume knob, and they ratchet it up as necessary. We have a switch. Once you flip that switch and you say enough's enough, there's no going back.
Right. But to keep from happening to flip that switch, what do we do? And where I'm going with this is I think we live in a world now where I'm going to go to the guns sooner.
I might put my hand on it, but I'm not going to pull it unless I need to. If I need to, that switch is going to be flipped.
Right. Well, and I 6 months ago, I would have agreed with you. Now, because and this goes back to where we started the conversation of the fire bombings. If I see somebody getting ready to throw a Molotov at me, I'm going to show the gun.
I'm shooting the gun. I'm not showing it to him. I'm not saying, hey, looky, looky.
So you're not going to give him a chance to back off?
He winds up, and he's got that thing at half-cock ready to throw that thing. He's catching one.
Okay.
He's going to burn in place.
Not that I disagree.
Can you burn him over the garden so I have some fertilizer, please?
Yes, I can do that. I can totally do that.
Might have to drag him back, because I tell you what, I'm not, like, right now, I wouldn't go to Denver on a bet.
No, I'm staying away from populated areas unless I have to be there.
You're going to have to be
there.
Yeah,
next week is going to be a very uncomfortable moment for me. But,
well, and actually, if you're hearing this, this was last week.
Yeah, well, okay, last week, yeah. Yeah, because we are in advance recording this one. But here's the deal, dude. I hate people. They bring everything wicked and ugly to the discussion, and it's self-serving, selfish need. I don't blame them for it. But they're ill-prepared, and they're reacting out of emotion.
Right.
And I'm not going to allow that to compromise my life or safety.
Well, I always go back to Men in Black got it right. The person is smart. Mm-hmm. People are a herd. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but...
Yeah, they're scared, and they're panicky, and they're nervous creatures.
Mm-hmm. Now, you built a... case gun.
I did.
So give me the rationale, because I can see that as being a truck gun. I can see that as being like something that you can actually relatively carry concealed.
In today's age, we have the availability to build these AR pistols. Mm-hmm. And this is what I built. And this pistol fits in a 12 by 9 case.
Okay.
All right. So 12 by 9 by 8 inches deep. It is a fully functional AR pistol, but it barrel comes off the receiver, stock folds, It gets up out of the way. Nobody's looking at a gun in a small little box like this.
Not that kind of a capability.
Correct. And this one's 300 blackout.
Okay.
Right? I did that for a reason, because it's maximum amount of payload with a maximum amount of ammo carry. Right? I can run a 30-round magazine out of this thing and be able to get from point A to point B with enough man stoppers, one-shot stop, 240-grain projectile moving in a subsonic rate. It's a close quarters thing. It's not a long gun. I'm not going to reach out forever and get you. It's a, I got to get from my house to my car, and you're getting out of my way.
And with running subsonic, you're not going to have to worry about over penetration.
Correct.
You're not going to be shooting through three guys and going into a crowd.
Nope. I'm going to fold one guy in half like a taco, and the next guy's going to take notice. You can put a drum magazine on this thing and have 50, so you don't have to worry about changing magazines. But assembly takes about 40 seconds.
Okay.
Once it's assembled, you go to work. You don't worry about how long it takes to disassemble, because that doesn't matter. It's like reholstering a firearm. You have all the time in the world because you've done your job at that point.
Right.
So returning it to the box is not my concern. Getting it up out of the box in a relative timely manner is necessary. But also, I can stash this thing behind the seat of my truck and nobody knows it's there. They can see it. Oh, there's a case there. Neat. But they don't know what's in it. And it's my little secret to get to where I'm going from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're just using a little Pelican case.
That's right.
I use those things for everything. And they're like, I have all mine labeled. Like, I have the same size case, but it's my video equipment.
Right.
Who would know?
That's exactly the point. It has an anonymity just by the nature of how compact it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's too big to be a single pistol case. It's way too small to be a rifle case. But when you unfold this thing and put it together, it's fully capable of a survival gun.
Right. And you're looking at, you're probably, what, a 100-yard gun?
I don't know that I would take a shot that far, but yeah, it would be capable of that. I mean, 50 yards and in is really where this thing's going to live.
Right.
If I needed it to be my everyday gun, it would be suppressed. There's plenty of room for a suppressor in the case, but this one's not.
Right. We need to fix that.
Fair enough. At the end of the day,
though, all guns should be suppressed.
All guns should be. Yes. This is meant to be not the gun I'm going to go shoot and play around at the range. This is not the gun I'm going to go hunting with. This is the gun that I'm going to go to get me home. And that's a big distinction. I travel enough to where you got to have one of those.
Right.
Because getting home is paramount. I have people that depend on me, and I can't leave them hanging.
Right.
So having a tool like this, it's going to grease a lot of wheels getting me home. It's going to move a lot of obstacles.
Yeah, because you start folding people in half, and you're exactly right. We've seen that where, you know, gunshots ring out and the mob will attack.
They will come.
But when they start seeing a lot of people dropping really fast, they're going to rethink their lives.
Leave that alone. Move on to the next target. It's easier.
Mm-hmm.
But this I can travel with. It has that anonymity, but that nobody knows I'm traveling with it. Right? It is completely legal in all 50 states.
Minus the 50-round drum.
Well, sure.
Yeah, my Colorado, you're screwed, Colorado.
I had this in possession pre-ban, so I'm okay.
Oh, you got to go get an eligibility card now.
Well, but those guys are getting shot because they're just talking to me about stupid shit. I'm trying to get home. Right? I mean, the bureaucracy time frame is over. We talked about the guy at Homestead. He has no place in the world.
Right.
At that point. So if I'm trying to get home, you have no authority over me.
Not anymore, no.
No. And then you're going to have to convince me that your idea is a good idea if I need to comply, because I have got a mission and you are not getting in the way of that.
Right.
I may very well like you and know you, but if you're getting in the way of my mission, you're expendable.
Now, okay, you talked about this thing 50 yards, right? I started thinking about defensibility in terms of miles. And what I kind of came to the conclusion, I pulled up a map of like the valley that we live in. And I figured out by strategically placing people with radios that would not be known to anybody coming in. They set up hide sites, set up listening posts. About 10 people with radios, we could control the entire valley.
Six, like, 9-year-olds with cell phones got us in trouble in Mogadishu.
Right. And that's exactly where I took the idea from. But being able to have advanced warning of anything entering into your space. Mm-hmm. So consider that. Where do your friends live in comparison to you?
That's right.
Can they work as advanced notice? And I think that this, in some kind of a, you know, where things really go to hell, I think your best friend is having a dozen or so good radios and go make friends.
Comms are critical, don't get me wrong, in any way, shape, or form. But when diplomacy fails, I need a tool.
Right, but that's why I really love this idea, is because I know what's coming 20 minutes before it can even get here. This allows me to have a smaller, quick reaction force and still be able to respond to the bigger threats, because I am meeting those threats before they become an immediate threat.
Correct. I couldn't agree with you more. And alliances, agreements, they all take commerce and trade.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're not going to play with you.
Well, and that was one of the other things I thought about, because, like, we live in we're in a community of farmers, ranchers. You know, we have the means to survive. Everybody here has something to contribute, but think about, like, okay, if I'm Farmer Bob down the road, and I have 150 sheep, but I still want to trade. But I don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry to know that I have 150 sheep. I only want them to think I have 20. So what you do is we go up here to the local, you know, our local store, and we make that a commerce point where people can come and you do your trade there, and everything's kind of at arm's length.
Not a bad plan. The downside is somebody's going to follow him home one day.
Well, and I think everybody here probably already knows what he has, because everybody here knows, you know.
In human nature.
I don't trade with outsiders.
If
I better know you.
Well, that's a really good policy. But at the end of the day, there's going to come along somebody that you don't know. And people eventually will follow you home. So you're going to have to defend the home.
So it's like a puppy that I keep in a kennel? Shock collar.
Yeah, but then their friends are going to come look for them, and you've started a thing.
That's right. I can shoot the wall of fire.
Then you're perpetuating the thing. So diplomacy can't fail. You got to be willing to play both sides of the fence. Otherwise, you eventually run out of...
Then don't follow me home.
Morality doesn't play into it. The thought process doesn't play into it. They're going to follow you home. They want to see what you've got and where you're keeping it. That creates a problem all into itself.
Well, and that's the whole idea behind the communication, is because, okay, they may be following you home, and they might be, you know, half a mile behind you where you're not seeing them, but your communication network caught them.
Right.
Now your quick reaction force reaches them before... They
find location.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's critical. You're absolutely right. And comms are amazing in that regard. So if you're going to defend any kind of homestead, advanced comms are essential.
I think it's absolutely critical. Because if I know what's coming, I can solve that problem before it ever becomes a problem.
Right. And wait, on the movie Homestead, you watch this fail. They have a observation post on the ridge, and a group of folks that are hungry, living in the canyon behind, stumble onto the property, think they're hunting, right? They still are holding on to societal rule.
Right.
And they stumble into this compound that's already protecting itself. And the guy uses his rifle scope as a spotting scope.
Yeah.
By nature of that, he's pointing his weapon at the listening post. He gets an order. He executes the order. And it was a total accident.
I don't know that it was. I mean,
well, from the hunter's perspective.
Yes.
It was ignorance born on the fact that they didn't understand the circumstances they stepped into.
It was, well, and it was negligence. At the end of the day, it was negligence on the part of the hunter because we carry binoculars for a reason.
Correct. You never use your rifle scope as a spotting scope,
and that's
for that reason. But he did in this circumstance.
He also didn't know there were people there.
Correct.
Right. He saw something flashing, and he was trying to figure out what it was.
And he used his rifle scope as a spotting scope. You're pointing your weapon at the thing that's looking back at you. 100% of the time, that's a threat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, if I've got a gun barrel coming pointed at me, yeah, it's a threat.
Nobody to blame in this circumstance. It's a shitty deal.
But that's you touch on a point, though. You need to, and this points to normality bias. You have to understand the world has changed. The rules have changed.
That's correct. And that young boy that had to shoot him had no concept of that.
No.
The hunters that got shot were standing there out in the open going,
no,
what's going on? They had no concept of that.
Mm-mm.
And casualties of a really bad situation. I wouldn't say either side's to blame. That just sucks.
It does suck, but that's not realizing that the rules that existed yesterday are no more.
Correct. And so the folks that survive are the winners.
That's right.
And make no mistake, there's winners, there's losers, and there's folks that don't play.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I don't know. That kind of world, I don't think you get to not play.
Point exactly.
That's
well taken. Right? At the end of the day, you have to play at some level.
Right.
So your own survival is going to depend on it.
So think about that. I mean, look, dear shooter. You know, we kind of this went a little further off the rails than I intended, but and oh my God, we've gone long again. This seems to be a habit of it. But like, we think about this stuff so that you don't have to. So that you can just tune in and go, I'm going to do that. But you have to apply this to your situation.
Yes.
Not everybody has, I mean, and I'll admit, like some of the advantages that we have living where we do. If you're in a big city, like your situation is going to be different. You have to think about the things that we're talking about and adapt them to what you're doing. And to adapt them to your situation. And maybe the best policy is to get out and go to grandma's.
Not a bad plan at all.
But I thought that when Trump got elected, everybody was going to take a deep breath and everything was going to
be
kosher. And, you know, more and more I'm thinking, God, you know, it's almost more dangerous now than it was 2 years ago.
We watched when the liberals didn't get their way. They burned cities. We mm-hmm. talked about this several times.
Yeah.
They go to violence immediately.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's only a matter of time. Like I said, it took me a long time to wrap my head around the fact that that side does think like we do in a certain aspect. So think about it. Do what you need to do. Stay vigilant because the danger's not over.
Conveniences won't be there tomorrow. Don't count on them.
Yeah. Count on yourself. Empowerment through self-reliance. And until next week, blame liberals.